This is the Humboldt Chronicles.
I am the queen of everything. I gotta be high before I can sway. Lighter TLNB. If you a viper. If you a viper.
Soil, Papa and Barkley, and tonight we welcome our newest sponsor, Magna Wealth Solutions. Welcome aboard, and thanks to all the sponsors. We're going to be talking here in studio with Brian Wilkham in just a minute. We're almost 3 months or so into California's legalization of commercial and recreational marijuana, as most people know. Business around the state is going on. It's good in some places, but sometimes it's frustrating for everyone from consumers to retailers to bankers all up and down the supply chain. We're going to survey that. And we're going to take a look at possible solutions for the future. Plus, we'll be opening the phone lines a little later for you at 707-786-5946, 786-5946. You can also email questions or comments to us at studio@HumboldtChronicles.com. As I said, here in studio with us is Brian Wilkham. He's the general manager of the Humboldt Patient Resource Center in Arcata. Also, we're going to be hearing from John Dalby, president and CEO of Redwood Capital Bank in Eureka. Also, our congressman, Jared Huffman. We'll be hearing from him. And we're going to be taking a trip to North Dakota, of all places. First of all, Brian Wilkham of Humboldt Patient Resource Center in Arcata. Thanks for being here.
Hi,
good to have you along for this discussion. You have an interesting background that we're going to get to here. One of the reasons we wanted to have you on this show. As the name suggests, the Humboldt Patient Resource Center began life as a medical marijuana outlet. When was that?
1999.
Okay. So that would have been among the first, at least.
Yeah, with compassionate use in 1996.
Right.
HBRC was one of the first in the state of California and the nation at that.
Right. I stopped by your shop, by the way, on January the 1st, when this legalization experiment started, and you guys were still waiting for a permit to show up on your computer screen.
We were. It was the state permit that we were waiting for, a temporary state permit.
Yeah. How did that go?
It went. It was applied for several weeks before, but the state was...
Several weeks?
Yes. The state was inundated with applications.
Yeah.
And so we were under the impression there was going to be a very smooth transition, but understanding it was a new endeavor by the state,
yeah,
they had a lot on their plate all at once.
Uh-huh.
So regardless of the local authority that we had to, yeah, wait to be compliant.
Yep.
And they did deliver about 7 days later.
You know, we've heard a similar story from some of the other states that they're doing this as well, Colorado among them. So we're not alone in that. Since then, how has business been, both in the medical field and just in the general retail?
Things have been great. It's,
yeah,
been great being able to service our recreational population, who a majority of were previously medical and have now not repurchased their medical recommendation or no longer feel that they need to, uh-huh, obtain a medical recommendation because...
Wouldn't it be cheaper, though?
Well, the tax structure is the same.
Ah.
Unless these individuals are state cardholders, which is an additional cost and an additional activity that they must undergo.
Then there's, yeah.
Then, okay, they can get the discount on the tax. But things have been going well. There has been frustrations, which I'm sure,
yeah,
you're going
to
investigate.
We're going to get to... I think I have also read and maybe also talked with you earlier about possible expansion for you into Eureka.
Yes, we have been invited to apply through Eureka.
Invited to apply.
Yeah, so Eureka was moving forward in a well-thought manner where they did request for proposals.
Uh-huh.
And once obtaining those proposals, they selected two businesses that they would invite to apply in the,
okay,
first 6 months of this year, and that they would also invite two more businesses in the second half of the year.
That's kind of their method of operation, right? Two or so every,
yes,
six months to a year or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this then. Let's assume that things go well and you open a second outlet in Eureka. So you'd have Arcata and Eureka. Would you be looking at expansion beyond that even?
We have been actually approached by other local regulators from other cities, city council members.
In Humboldt County?
In Humboldt County and outside of Humboldt County, actually.
Ah, I was going to ask, can you go outside of Humboldt County?
Yes, but we are Humboldt Patient Resource Center. We have serviced our community, and it's hard to think that you can just continue to expand and keep the same quality without really taking the time to investigate the needs of each community that you're operating in.
Yeah.
So right now we see a great fit with Eureka, and we see that we can mutually benefit each other, and we're very excited.
And possibly other places as well.
Absolutely, one step at a time.
One step at a time. Well, that gets me to another question, and that's about saturation, market saturation. I'm sure as a business guy, you have thought about that. What do you think this market around here can support?
Well, locally, there's only so much consumption.
Yeah.
I think that that's a big misunderstanding, is that there's so much cannabis grown here in Humboldt, it must all just be consumed here, and that's just not the case.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're working with our vendors in particular, there's only so much product that we can procure from them as a retail outlet.
Right.
Their product needs to be exported through legal channels out to the larger markets in San Francisco, Los Angeles, mm-hmm. throughout the state of California, and hopefully eventually, with lowering federal barriers,
yep.
out across the nation and yep. potentially the world.
Yeah. Well, and who knows if that's going to happen or not. In fact, that also reminds me that Humboldt County right now, Board of Supervisors is considering a new cannabis ordinance, which I believe is 2,000 pages long, including the environmental impact study. I have to confess I have not gotten through the entire 2,000 pages, but what do you know about it, and what do you think about it so far?
Not enough, because
yeah.
it's continually changing. Now, that's not just the county, though. The state has emergency regulations that will be changing into July. So it's not just our local politicians that are having these challenges. It is a very large beast to try to tame.
And that's not even mentioning the banking problem. You are a former banker, mm-hmm. actually. Wells Fargo, is that right?
Yeah, and Bank of America before that.
And you were recruited from the banking industry to help HBRC.
Yeah.
So you look at this from a business standpoint, from a financial standpoint, from a banker's standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Your relationship with financial institutions, how's that going?
We're lucky to have a great relationship.
You do?
Yes. But the problem is that a lot of our stakeholders, our vendors, our distributors do not have that same access.
So how do you do business with them?
It's very difficult sometimes to do business. And furthermore, you know, it's difficult when you're trying to be law-abiding, and there right. are certain IRS documents that
yep.
need to be filled out, yet you're providing the IRS with documents of your illegal activity.
Mm-hmm.
It's frustrating because you do everything you can do to be compliant, but again, mm-hmm. like you said earlier, it's not federally legal.
No, it's not. And it's also frustrating for the bankers, too, as you would know as a former banker.
Mm-hmm.
Frustrating for the bankers as well because of their ties to the federal financial system, obviously. Here's John Dalby. He is president and CEO of Redwood Capital Bank in Eureka, and we asked him why cannabis companies can't just open an account.
The simple answer is because cannabis is an illegal activity. The Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution says that federal law trumps state law, and therefore, until the federal government determines that cannabis is legal, it is an illegal operation. The problem is the federal government has chosen to not pursue or enforce laws currently, which puts us in a state of nebulous. So when we talk about cannabis, we're talking about an illegal activity. To possess it, to grow it, to use it, all of that is an illegal activity. The laws are that we cannot participate in money laundering. And so if you take cash or any money from an illegal activity, whether it's cannabis, whether it's heroin, whether it's burglary, and launder that money into the money system, we are participating in money laundering. So if we are aware that a cannabis operation is putting money into the system, by law, through the there's a number of laws, the AML, which would be the anti-money laundering laws, and the Bank Secrecy Act, BSA. Those two acts prohibit us from participating in the laundering of money.
And here's the thing. Banks take a risk if they just look the other way, particularly in today's climate here in California. Here again, John Dalby of Redwood Capital Bank on whether banks have an obligation to make sure that cannabis is not the source of a deposit.
Yes, we do. Our requirements, in fact, all of this is being redefined as we speak. Our due diligence, or the due diligence of any lender, is to look to see if any illegal activity, not just cannabis, but any illegal activity, is taking place in the property. If so, to knowingly finance an illegal activity is to participate. And that would be, again, an illegal activity. So you're going to find very few lenders that are going to be interested in making loans into that industry for that very reason. That's federally illegal.
Brian, your reaction to all that as a retailer in this business and a former banker?
I agree.
Yeah.
And that is the law of the land, and I understand the frustrations. But also who suffers here are the local community who mm-hmm. could benefit mm-hmm. from having that money enter the banking system, making it available for local loans.
And the bankers would like to do business with these, whether they're cultivators or retail operations like yourself. They want to do business.
Absolutely. Especially now with state laws, these businesses are going to be more scrutinized than probably most yeah. of their clientele.
Yeah. Here's another question for you, and it has to do with property. I'm guessing that HPRC does not own the property?
No, owning property actually puts you at risk of asset forfeiture to the federal government.
That's where we're going. What about the risk to commercial property owners, then, who lease to cannabis businesses?
Absolutely. I mean, these are concerns that have actually slowed down the progress of some local permits, mm-hmm. is what once was a great location that had a good relationship, good setup, good plan.
Right. Sure.
Once that landowner finds out, oh, this activity I'm kind of responsible for, ooh, mm-hmm. I'm stepping back, and now we've slowed down your entire
process. And asset forfeiture can include real property.
Absolutely.
And given the current administration, yeah, I see a big smile. Yeah, there's a possibility. Mm-hmm. Well, on that topic, here again is John Dalby of Redwood Capital Bank in Eureka on the issue of commercial property owners leasing to cannabis businesses.
One of the biggest concerns that I have is you talked about our due diligence on loans. And so let's take commercial real estate or ag land, whatever it is. Generally, those loans, when you make such a loan, will have a call date in them. So maybe it's, 25-year amortization due in 10 or 15 or, 20 years, whatever it is. Depends on who your lender is and what the terms were at the time they were made. If in the interim you lease or you directly become involved in illegal activity and that loan comes due and payable, it's very likely that lender will not be able to renew or extend that loan. And we're going to see some challenges coming up for owners of commercial properties and land, rural lands, that took out loans without any illegal activity and then got involved in it either through leasing or directly. Now they're going to have a challenge, and it could get very ugly. So my message would be, if you have commercial property or even residential property, any property, and you're going to lease to a cannabis operation of any sort, be very careful and understand what the ramifications could be.
All right, after that, I don't want to put you on the spot with a hypothetical situation, but hypothetically, mm-hmm. what if a loan were called from a commercial business owner? And I don't know where you're looking at in Eureka. Have you talked with the commercial property owner there in your permit process?
Well, we had some hurdles with our building owner in regards to this individual being outside of the area.
Mm-hmm.
So having to include them.
In California, though?
Yeah, but outside of the area to where you are not local control.
Right.
And it's very important to ensure that you have transparent communications with that landowner, mm-hmm. and they are going to be held responsible if they, just like John said, not done their due diligence to mm-hmm. look at what their renter is pursuing and what activities. City of Eureka has done a good job, however, of including this situation in their application.
How so?
You have to actually have your landowner sign off on your application.
So they know what you're doing.
Absolutely.
City of Eureka knows that they know what you're doing.
There you go.
So the City of Eureka then is not liable then in
not
any way
liable.
Because they've had full disclosure.
But there's still that risk. And that, unfortunately, is what I feel like has slowed down a lot of progress, is when you have sound investors who are looking to mitigate that risk.
Right.
This is a big red flag.
I was just going to ask, we keep hearing through the grapevine that there are a lot of investors out there who are interested in California cannabis business because it has a multi-billion dollar potential. Mm-hmm. That gets the attention of a lot of people who have money to invest. Are they being a little reticent because of some of these issues? What do you hear through your grapevine in the industry?
Sure. So our experiences and what we hear through the grapevine is, yes, you have the big money coming in. Mm-hmm. What I'm also hearing is that the big money is saying, you guys are too far behind.
In what way?
You don't have mass distribution set up. Your roadways are falling apart. I don't think I can have those trucks come up here and get that turnaround in time and keep costs low. We're having these large-scale distributors basically saying, this isn't organized enough for us. We're going to go down to San Luis Obispo, where we're
closer
to
the larger markets. And so what do we do about that?
Well, you know, that's something that Humboldt County has an interesting point of view on in general.
And what is that point?
Well, being in Arcata, you know, the city of Arcata has the corporate committee, where if you are a franchise corporation, you must be interviewed by their committee before you're allowed to enter into their city. So we haven't been inviting big box opportunities, big money. However, at times, the local industry needs that influx. They also need their channels of distribution, their technological savvy ways. So it's a challenge because we want to stay local, have local control. But at the same time, the external investors are the ones who seem to be able to make things move faster.
And are you optimistic they're going to be? Because that gets us back to what we were talking about earlier in market saturation here, meaning that this area needs access to markets like the Bay Area, Sacramento, San Diego, Los Angeles, and that means transportation.
Well, from what I'm hearing, a lot of distribution licenses are being issued in Humboldt County, but many of them are self-distributing. So we don't have a very large company that's taking that position of saying, we want to distribute Humboldt County product to the Bay, to LA, to these larger markets. It's more of the mom and pop self-distributing. And eventually we're going to reach those economies of scale where we're unable to
compete. That's not going to work.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of work to do.
A lot of work, and we've called it in our market co-opetition. Because we are competing, but each of us, our mutual success is
dependent upon
absolutely
the whole getting this right. As you said, well, we are just getting started on this huge topic. A little bit later, we'll be including your calls and comments. You're listening to the Humboldt Chronicles. As we go to break, a cultivator minute from Nat Pennington from Humboldt Seed Company.
My name is Nat Pennington, and I'm the CEO and founder of Humboldt Seed Company. I think one of the things that's most evident recently with the onslaught of pests and pathogens is that people are starting to prefer seed because you can be very confident that you're not going to start your season off with any mites or diseases from a seed. We've always really appreciated seeds and the way that they grow more vigorously. They have this nice taproot, and it's a nice natural way. And I think, you know, as seeds become more stabilized and consistent, that we'll be starting to see more and more people using seeds. But clones will definitely always have a place as well. You also can have something that is a little bit more unique for the marketplace with seeds. You know, it's not a clone of a clone of a clone of something that everyone has or is growing. And, you know, for Humboldt County, there's a lot of really great breeders here in the county. And I think we need to honor that and honor sort of our history and what we've built here so that we don't kind of get lost in the mix. If we honor the work of our breeders here, then we have a unique value-added product that is inherently Humboldt. So if folks want to find us and learn about our products, you can go to our website, which is HumboldtSeedCompany.com. We look forward to hearing from you, and have a great summer.
I'll say it again, we have the best music. Welcome back to the Humboldt Chronicles. We're continuing our conversation with Brian Welcome, General Manager of the Humboldt Patient Resource Center in Arcata. As we've been talking about, there are a lot of challenges on the business end of cannabis in California right now. Do you agree or not agree that some of the solutions obviously are at the federal level, and the federal level could make this a lot easier on everybody?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely. And, you know, reduce a lot of our stress for those who are compliant, transparent, and entering the California legal market.
And trying to do it the right way.
Absolutely. It's still tough thinking that you may be a criminal.
Yeah, exactly. Federally. Mm-hmm. In fact, Attorney General Jeff Sessions was just here in California not long ago, you know, making his point about not this, not just this, but many other issues. Recently, producer Larry Trask talked with our congressman, speaking of the federal level, Jared Huffman, about this. Here's what the congressman had to say.
I am co-sponsoring legislation, and there's a great coalition that is bipartisan to change federal law to allow banking, to allow other things, use of the U.S. Postal Service, and so forth. We haven't been able to move that forward yet, and the situation we find ourselves in is probably still a federal policy of deference to states as long as they more or less comply with the Cole memo and don't engage in interstate trafficking and, you know, keep the stuff away from children, et cetera, keep it off federal property. But a lot of ambiguity caused by Attorney General Jeff Sessions. And he has so far not gone forward with prosecutions and other things that could maybe inspire us to act here in Congress. So we're just in this limbo period. And I don't think we will resolve this until after the election, unless Jeff Sessions acts. And if he cracks down on some cannabis operation that's legal in one of these states, then I think you could see quick congressional action. And in a way, that might be the fastest way we could get clarity on this.
So interestingly, Brian, Congressman Huffman is saying if Jeff Sessions overplays his hand, that might actually, in an odd way, be exactly what it takes to get the political will in Washington. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, at the expense of more victims. And so that's the troubling part, is the efforts of that business to be compliant and their investments, their time, to see that then become the scapegoat. It's tough, or in that case, the martyr.
Do you hear anything from Huffman's office or from Feinstein's office or anything like that from any of our federal folks?
We keep a pulse, but there is so much going on from so many different players, and the power position is still not settled. Mm-hmm. And so we have really relied on the BCC, the Bureau of Cannabis Control, who's our regulator, and our local city governments to keep a strong relationship to ensure that we're doing everything that we can to abide by their rules, their regulations. Yep. And so if that day ever came, that we would say, look, we have crossed our T's, we have dotted our I's, we are doing everything that we can, and we're willing to do whatever else you're asking.
Right. And for now, that's all you can do, right?
That's all you can do for now.
Well, implementing change like we're talking about is never easy, and it is never cheap. There is, however, a suggestion getting some consideration in Sacramento at the state level and in Los Angeles at the city council level there. The idea is a public bank, state-owned or city-owned, and operated outside the federal financial system. It's not perfect, and there are some difficult hurdles that it presents. There is one and only one public bank of its kind in the United States. It's the Bank of North Dakota, opened in the Fargo area in the early 1900s, so over 100 years ago, to help small farmers who were struggling at the time to compete with no control over interest rates, no control over prices, or even shipping costs for crops like wheat, corn, and soybeans. All legal crops federally, by the way. The Bank of North Dakota is, in fact, still open and thriving. There are some problems with this suggestion as it relates to California, and we're going to poke holes in that after this.
Not only did they have to fight the evil empire, but they had to fight being branded as Bolsheviks, as revolutionaries, as socialists, as communists. And really, they're just simply farmers who wanted a fair shake.
That's author Roseanne Enerson-Junker, who's written extensively about the Bank of North Dakota, a locally owned institution that turned out to be the pathway to financial independence for thousands of small farmers beginning in the early 1900s.
And so the idea that they could take control over some of these questions that affected their livelihood was, I mean, it was a fabulous idea as far as those farmers were concerned.
Good morning, Bank of North Dakota.
Not only did it work, it's still working. Going strong, in fact. This is Wayne Stenahan, North Dakota Attorney General.
The state of North Dakota is in the banking business. That's what the Bank of North Dakota does, and it's one of the biggest banks in the country, assets of $2 billion, and some say the biggest bank between Minneapolis and Seattle. And it's something that has served the needs of North Dakota quite well, and actually, most North Dakotans are very, very proud of it.
It's important to remember that public banks are not necessarily confined to supporting and facilitating one industry. In fact, they can help fund everything from infrastructure projects to renewable energy. This is Governor John Hoeven of North Dakota and North Dakota Agriculture Commissioner Roger Johnson.
Our state is growing. We're getting, I think, exciting new businesses and new business opportunities. We want to grow our state's economy. We want to diversify our state's economy, and the bank's part of that. and grows with it.
Here you are. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think that desire on the part of North Dakotans to want to be a part of their own destiny is really the reason that the bank exists.
An important part of economic development is as our people come forward with creative ideas and try to do things, in almost every case, financing is part of the equation. That creates more jobs and more opportunities. That's what the Bank of North Dakota does, and it needs to continue to be an important part of our growth and development.
The fact that it has matured into the kind of bank that it is really shows why it does serve a purpose, even though it is, some argue, a socialist institution. Now that might seem unusual, and it is, but it really does underline how hard the bank works to be a part of the state of North Dakota, of the economic development that we see for the state of North Dakota, and it is a part of the infrastructure, is a part of the history and tradition of North Dakota, and is really a full partner in the state of North Dakota.
Thanks to Prairie Public Broadcasting for some of that sound. Brian, is this a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, I'm in support of sound financial management.
And well, yeah.
With this bank saying that economic development being their focus, not only the profit incentive, like many banks, that's where some of these banks get into the situations they get into. Mm-hmm. Fractional reserve banking and overlending and not having that deposit base available. I think it's a great idea to investigate. Now, will we have to iron some things out? Will there be threats from the federal government? Perhaps. But looking into that direction for inspiration, I think, is an amazing step for California.
All right. Here's poking a hole in the suggestion. In North Dakota in the early 1900s, obviously, they were talking about wheat, corn, soybeans, alfalfa, whatever else. We're talking about a federally illegal crop here. Comments on that?
That's the challenge. Now, that's where the federal government can make everybody's lives
much
easier.
If they reschedule.
Reschedule it, make it available. Now, you know, some of our stakeholders have said that rescheduling is even a threat, to where if it's rescheduled incorrectly, mm-hmm. dispensaries will then go out of business. You'll have to pick up your medicine at the pharmacy, like other scheduled drugs. So it's a new unknown. And that's where we're hoping that we acknowledge, like we briefly commented on, that the federal government has patents for the use of cannabinoids as a neuroprotectant. So we have to...
Which means money.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's probably why we're being impeded and there's slow progress, is because behind scenes, something is getting worked out. If you're issuing these patents, mm-hmm. you obviously are finding the medical value. Mm-hmm. But if you're keeping that schedule, one, you have a reason to do so. And I can't speak on their reason, but that's the
You
impact.
Want to speculate on the reason?
Oh, I'm sure most of us know.
Follow the money?
Pharmaceutical maybe? Industry right now has actually caused a lot of damage through overprescription of opioids. Mm-hmm. The cannabis industry is seeing a very large amount of people using cannabinoids instead of opioids. And with that comes a loss to the pharmaceutical companies.
And a lot of research in that direction, too. Mm-hmm. So let's get some input on this from another banker, John Dalby of the Redwood Capital Bank in Eureka.
This is something that Jan Owens of the Department of Business Oversight has been looking at for over a year, trying to find a way for the state of California to collect their revenues without having to accept currency. And that's very dangerous and challenging for both sides of the equation, both for the state and for the payee. That said, they've been working towards trying to find a way to get into the system and to get an organization that, or a bank or a credit union that could accept these deposits. There is one publicly owned financial institution in the country, and that's in the Dakotas, I believe North Dakota. Yeah. And, of course, that's over 100 years old. It was a long time ago that was formed. The challenge that they're having is, in order to get money from a financial institution into the banking system, you have to have a master account with the Federal Reserve Bank. And the challenges of getting one are significant. So you have to get federal approval from the Federal Reserve Bank in order to get a master account. Now, I just read that there was a credit union in Colorado that was just given a master account, okay, which is interesting. But that master account is contingent upon them not taking deposits from anybody who is growing selling, manufacturing, or transporting any illegal substance. So they have the master account, but they can't use it for cannabis. So really, the answer to all of our challenges in both the banking and the cannabis industry comes from the federal government. And there has been really no significant movement in getting the federal government to legalize it. That's really the answer to this equation is the federal government has to legalize it. Currently, it's a Schedule I drug. It's equivalent to heroin. So when people say it's legalized, they say, yes, it's as legal as heroin.
A follow-up question we had for John Dalby on this. We also asked him if it would be possible at all to set up a full-service bank, not just a money exchange, a full-service bank outside the federal system.
No, it's impossible. In fact, there's been talk of setting up an account with the state, which people could then deposit into that. But the problem with any of these solutions is whatever the entity is, whether it's a state-owned entity, whether it's a privately owned entity, that you are participating in the process of laundering money from an illegal activity as soon as you accept that currency. So, you know, does the state want to get into money laundering? Because in essence, that's what they're doing, is they're defying the federal government saying, you know, we're going to launder the money. So these are the challenges. And again, it comes down to if we want to legalize cannabis, it really needs to be done at the federal level. And that's, you know, so contact your representative, contact your congressmen, your senators. They're the ones that need to fix the problem.
Brian, agree or disagree with John Dalby on that?
Well, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, he's bound by those same laws. An interesting note, though, the FDIC has gone bankrupt before. And, you know, it's interesting that it is the insurer of depositors. But when I was working at Wells Fargo, I do remember the FDIC asking for multiple year premiums up front from these larger banks in order to keep solvent because of the amount of banks that had gone bankrupt in 2008. So
I wonder where some of that money might come from.
Yeah, there you go.
A new business, maybe? A new industry?
Imagine that.
but here's the question also, though. Let's assume the FDIC does not become insolvent. Would you support a bank that was not a full service bank, that was more of a money vault, a money exchange, so that vendors and retailers, growers and so on could at least not have to do business in cash?
I think it's common sense. And I think that as individuals become more familiar with the cannabis industry and treat it more like any other industry, they'll just understand that there's those basic needs for fulfilling payroll.
Exactly.
For paying taxes,
yep.
Paying for annual permits and fees. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that communities are going to want to have large amounts of cash driven through their towns.
I was just going to ask, as a retailer, I think the last thing you want is a lot of cash on hand.
And some of these new carrier services, the courier services, they are armed guards. They are, I mean, even more than Brinks. So are we trying to escalate or normalize? And that's where we're hoping is we're trying to normalize.
What do you hear on that? That we're waiting for the federal government,
exactly.
Like Congressman Huffman said, to do something.
In the meantime, businesses are doing what they need to do, and through that, new innovative services are being offered. But those increase costs. Costs when you could just accept a debit card and have that deposited into your bank account.
Right.
Instead, you're having to use third parties and really abstract type of payment systems that we don't participate in. But it also is probably lowering our potential revenue by not having access to those forms of payment.
As a guy who comes from the business world, from the banking world, that's got to be very frustrating.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you see exactly how this could work.
Yeah, and we hear it from even our manufacturers. You know, all their money went into their permitting, and now they need to basically have access to a line of credit to be able to purchase some raw material to go into extraction.
Like other small businesses
like
do.
Many small businesses.
Yeah, sure. Our guest, Brian Wilcombe of the Humboldt Patient Resource Center, is going to be staying with us, and we're going to take a look down the road with him. Plus, next, we'll add your phone calls to the discussion. You can reach us if you want to at 707-786-5946 or at studio at humboldtchronicles.com. Before a break, though, a cannabis calendar minute. If you're in the cannabis industry or just interested in it, here are a few events going on soon that you might want to know about.
Welcome to this month's edition of the Cannabis Calendar, brought to you by the Humboldt Chronicles. The calendar features information on upcoming cannabis-related conferences and events that take place within a couple days' drive of Humboldt County. If investing in the cannabis industry or attracting investment is of interest to you, then you'll want to know about the CNVest Venture Fair. This event takes place Monday, April 9th at the San Jose Hilton. Check out their website at canawire.co/CNVest. Also in San Jose, at the Convention Center, April 10th and 11th, the Terpenes and Testing World Conference takes place. This convention focuses on extraction, testing, and cultivation and offers panel discussions, breakout sessions, and networking activities. Find out more at terpenesandtesting.com. Finally, a little further from home, the Oregon Hemp Convention takes place in Portland on April 14th. The convention promises a full day of educational sessions to bring you up to speed on rapidly changing developments in the cannabis industry. More information is available at OregonHempConvention.com. If you'd like to have your event listed on the cannabis calendar, email us the details at studio@HumboldtChronicles.com.
You're listening to the Humboldt Chronicles. Here in the studio with us is Brian Wilcombe of the Humboldt Patient Resource Center in Arcata. And we've opened our phone lines. If you want to register a comment with us, you can reach us at 707-786-5946 or by email, studio@HumboldtChronicles.com. You know, another piece to this puzzle has to do with businesses that are not necessarily growing marijuana, not necessarily selling it in retail stores. We're talking, of course, about businesses that are ancillary to the cannabis trade but are involved with products that could possibly be used in the cannabis businesses. How are they defined and looked at in the banking sector? Here again is John Dalby.
And that's a really good question. So where do you define, where do you draw the lines? So the first major line is this. Does the company ever actually handle or possess a cannabis product? So if I'm selling soils, which is the biggest one, to a grower, no, that's an indirect, it's a marijuana-related business, but it's indirect, okay? If you're selling, you know, lights, pots, pumps, trucks, gasoline, diesel, whatever it is, those are indirect marijuana businesses. Now, I would contend that with very few exceptions, every business in Humboldt County is an indirect marijuana related business, because somewhere or another they're supplying services or products to the industry. And so that's the first thing is there cannabis ever in possession of that company? The second one is, are they exclusive? Meaning if they only sell to a marijuana-related businesses, the products can only be used by it, then that would probably be considered a direct marijuana-related business. So if they're not directly involved, okay? Are they getting paid through cannabis proceeds, and are those coming in the form of currency into a bank? Now, that's a big another big definition. If money from cannabis comes in by form of check or an electronic transfer, well, that's not money laundering. It's when you take currency and turn it into a bank account so that it can be wired or a check written or electronic funds transferred. That's money laundering. So if they're receiving dividends or whatever by check and depositing them in a bank, there's really nothing we can say or do.
Brian, you deal with businesses like this daily, I assume. You must hear from them about this.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a challenge for them. And even when working for Wells Fargo as a corporation identified Humboldt County as a high traffic area, a high drug traffic area, which means that their computer system mandatorily would pop up for filings. There's nothing that you can do about it. You would be held liable if you did not fill out those filings that John's talking about at the federal level. And so, he has a great point. It's reasonable diligence that he's done. Do they touch cannabis? Are they exclusive to cannabis? That's how those banks are going to have to make that decision right now.
And these are some of your vendors.
Absolutely. And they're met with those same challenges of, I'm excited to say I've expanded my staff from 10 to 15, and now I can't meet payroll because I can't get it into the bank in time, and these people can't take cash, or they want a direct deposit into their bank. And even payments that we may have to produce may require extra paperwork for those vendors to deposit.
Before we get a last word from John Dalby here, are you optimistic?
Yes, and the biggest reason is increasing patient access, education, and reducing the criminal element. That's what we're excited for, and we're
excited of the product.
Safety of the product, which, you know, we've been proud to lab test for several years. Mm-hmm. We've really tried to get ahead of the game here, but it's also through education and educating both the user and the non-user. Mm-hmm. We're very excited for the social change, and also hopefully the impact to these absurd taxes. We're hoping to see some benefit because these taxes are atrocious.
Let's get a last word now from John Dalby of Redwood Capital Bank regarding the frustrations of bankers.
Do I wish it would go away completely? Absolutely. I wish they would either legalize it or enforce the laws, because the state of nebulous makes it difficult. And that's why we're having this conversation, is because the federal government is neither legalizing it nor enforcing it. So it leaves this void in which everybody's speculating on what can and can't be done. And that's the challenge. So it would be much easier for us to focus. I would not have spent a year and a half of my life trying to figure out how to deal with this topic. We would have worked on other things that would have been more productive. So, you know, if it was legalized, it would be much easier, because now I can fund those things, I can take their deposits, we can do what we need to do. If it was enforced, then we know exactly where we stand. So that's the challenge. I don't see a short-term solution. I don't believe there is the will in Congress to make the changes to legalize it. Even our representative, I don't think, has ever forwarded any legislation to legalize cannabis on a federal level. The will at Washington, D.C. is not there. And I think a lot of that... various people have explained to me why that is the case, but mostly it's because there are a lot of people that don't believe they would be reelected if they voted in favor of legalizing cannabis. So until there's a political will, I don't think there's a solution. So we may be in this state of nebulous for years to come.
A nebulous state, Brian, is how John Dalby characterizes it from your end in the retail business. Is that your feeling as well? Limbo?
I greatly appreciate our customer base and our patients for dealing with the changes, to seeing price changes that don't make sense because we purchased an item in 2017 that has a different tax structure than 2018, to having changes in the workflow because of the need for a security guard now, restricted access areas, no more, you know, viewing of the facility in certain portions. Yes, it is. It's stressful and it's challenging, but we try to stay focused on the positivity and remembering that our job as dispensary retail operations is to work out all the behind the scenes, but to deliver a high quality experience to the individuals in our facility.
You know, something else that a business person always does is long range planning. Mm-hmm. How do you possibly do any kind of long range planning in this situation? How do you see the future?
Well, one of the things in that topic right there is we see that without Humboldt County being successful, we're not going to be successful. So looking long-term, one of the items that we're pursuing right now is our community wellness center in Eureka that's separate from our dispensary. Mm-hmm. And we're using that center not only as a cannabis education center, but as a business community gathering center to understand the needs of all local constituents and stakeholders in regards to this developing cannabis industry, and to work together towards what we hope as a vibrant future that goes beyond just cannabis and includes ecotourism into Humboldt County that really supports our environment, outdoors, the food, the entertainment we can deliver, and cannabis. We think that that's something that would benefit the entire community.
It's interesting you bring that up, because several months ago I talked with a person from the Public Policy Institute of California who did mention that Humboldt County should be able to look at this not just from the lens of retail cannabis, but also tourism. Absolutely. You agree with that?
And my director sent me out to Colorado about 4 years ago, to Oregon, to Washington, to Alaska, to investigate every market that was moving into recreational sales. So we took a lot of notes, and we learned that tourism is something that Humboldt County still has work to really accomplish, to compete with cities like San Francisco, mm-hmm. to compete with Denver, Colorado, to Portland, Oregon, to where these cities have a wide density of cannabis businesses in a very small area with great transportation, with great accommodations, wow. with entertainment just down the street, to where if we're going to compete against these cities yeah. to get people to make Arcata, Humboldt, Eureka a tourist destination, we have a lot of work to do.
Have you talked to people about that? That's an interesting concept where it's all contained in a walkable area. Have you talked to folks around here about that?
Absolutely.
And what are you hearing?
Well, the concern I hear a lot is drug driving, which I think is something that needs to be discussed. On the other end, there is education that comes with that. Cannabis and alcohol are different drugs. Mm-hmm. But we have a community here that, regardless of who's driving behind that wheel, we are all potential victims, if you will. So
sure.
I'm very invested in an education campaign in drug driving education, and also, though, proper areas for consumption. We have an issue with people smoking in public. Mm-hmm. Law-abiding citizens are purchasing cannabis, paying their taxes, and asking, where do I consume?
Yeah.
And they have nowhere that they can consume legally. So we're hoping that the county or cities will come out with some sort of lounge ordinance that allows us to take some of these smokers inside in a safe environment and freeze up those community spaces for the community again.
But would that run contrary to the current California state law of not smoking indoors in public places? I mean, that would have to be revised, obviously.
Absolutely.
Is that right?
Absolutely. And these are the face value conversations that we need to have. There's a need. This need has a barrier to entry. Let's discuss that barrier. Can it be lowered without putting other people at risk? Mm-hmm. Or can we mitigate that somehow and work with those communities who have expressed that we have an issue with public consumption and we'd like to bring that into a controllable, regulated, and potentially taxable form?
But your earlier point there of a concentrated area where a lot of these, and I assume you could look at zoning as a way to get to make this happen. If a lot of these dispensaries, these retail outlets, were in one area where there were also hotels, where there were also restaurants and all the, you know, the public facilities that you would need, and it was walkable, and maybe even the streets are closed to traffic, so it's a pedestrian mall in some ways, it seems that might work.
Absolutely, it might. And the other side of that, though, is we don't want just density and clustering, because we would like access for those individuals in our community
yeah.
who may not have
vehicles. Don't have transportation.
Absolutely, yeah. So we're trying to meet the needs of tourists and trying to meet the needs of our community members.
Brian, you have a lot of good ideas. I hope to have you back sometime as we move forward in this, and we'll check in with you again. We want to thank our guest, Brian Wilcombe of the Humboldt Patient Resource Center in Arcata, John Dalby, President and CEO of Redwood Capital Bank in Eureka, and Congressman Jared Huffman. And again, information about the Bank of North Dakota, courtesy and big thanks to Prairie Public Broadcasting and the USDA Rural Development. Larry, I'm guessing you learned a lot tonight.
I did learn a lot. I learned a lot tonight, and also as we were doing the research to put together this show. Mm-hmm. I think the thing that keeps coming back to me and is becoming sort of clearer and clearer in my mind are the enormous challenges facing the people who are in this business. I mean, not only do you have to deal with all of the challenges that are associated with any new business, also doing business in Humboldt County, but there's a whole bunch of other things that cannabis businesses have to deal with that no other business does, even from as simple a matter as opening a checking account.
Yeah.
And yes, some of these things will sort of go away as things get sorted out, but also I think there's more uncertainty in this business than any other business I can think of, and it's just, I wouldn't go so far as to say that things are being set up to fail, but there's a lot to be worked out before cannabis business functions the same way that any other normal business does.
Yeah, very good point. If we have just a second here, Brian, what Larry was saying gets to what you were mentioning during a commercial break, in that just exactly what he's talking about. The hours that you have to work to just deal with a lot of this are enormous, right?
They are. They're taxing. And it's not just the retail businesses. It's all businesses. It's the cultivators, the manufacturers, distribution. And we're weeding through thousands of pages of regulations. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to get on board with the track and trace system. We're trying to also have high-end, high-quality businesses.
Sure.
And that in itself is going to take a full-time job right there, and now throw in the unknown. It's stressful, but again, being a patient advocate as well, it's worth it. It's really worth it to move this industry forward and give these individuals access. And we're excited for the recreational component, but I've been a patient advocate for a long time, and that's what I'm most excited about.
Well, you're a good spokesperson for the industry, and thanks for being here again.
Thank you for your time.
I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. This edition of the Humboldt Chronicles will be posted soon at 941lounge.com, lostcoastoutpost.com, and at iTunes for listening and downloading. I want to thank again the sponsors of this program: Archaeological Research and Supply, Eco Groovy Deals in Arcata, Royal Gold Soil, Papa and Barkley, and welcome to our newest sponsor, Magna Wealth Solutions. Thank you very much. We'll be back with the Humboldt Chronicles at 6 p.m. on the third Wednesday of each month. So we'll see you next time, which will be April the 18th at 6 o'clock.